ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts.
We're going to have one lap of racing to decide the championship in 2021. They almost make contact into turn nine. Verstappen stays ahead of Lewis Hamilton. Of all the drama, of all the controversy, of all the magic moments in Formula One in 2021, it comes down to this. And at this moment, it looks like it's going to go the way of Max Verstappen. Max Verstappen, for the first time ever, is champion of the world.
This was the season when Formula One racing truly became this American phenomenon. So it feels fitting, at the very least, that while Max Verstappen upset Lewis Hamilton to win his first world title, the drama has really only just begun. ESPN's Lawrence Edmondson was there at the track in Abu Dhabi, and today he explains exactly what happened for F1's many, many new fans. Then, our Monday morning quarterback, Alex Smith, brings us back stateside to chart the latest twist and turn in the reality show that is the NFL. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, December 13th. This is ESPN Daily. So Lawrence Edmondson, I bring you on here because you cover Formula One for ESPN from London, but today you are at a truly historic event, a race in Abu Dhabi. And I know it's an ungodly hour there right now, but I imagine you've been dealing with the aftermath pretty much ever since the race ended. So just where are you right now? When are you right now?
Well, it's 3:15 in the morning in Abu Dhabi. I'm in my hotel. I've just recently driven back from the circuit, having got told that the last shuttle bus was leaving the media center around 2 a.m. And I'm still trying to process it, if I'm completely honest. There's a lot to get through. And I've done my best to try and chase down different people to talk to, get different opinions, bounce opinions off other people. Because, I'm sure your listeners will know if they've kind of got a slight gist of the story. It was pretty controversial today.
Yeah, people are mad. Like Twitter, the internet, racing fans, they're all varying degrees of furious, I would say. And everyone's kind of searching for answers. And so, look, on Friday's episode, we kind of set up the basics of this rivalry between Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen. But the race, bring us up to the end, I suppose.
Well, the race kind of went as we expected. On the very first lap, the two drivers started next to each other at the front of the grid. So we were ready for a proper showdown. We knew that if one of them finished ahead of the other, essentially, as long as they were in the points, that driver would win the race. So it was perfectly set up. And it's very rare that that happens in Formula One. First of all, it's very rare that we go into a season finale and it's winner takes all. That was pretty special. And right from the start, we saw the two of them go wheel to wheel. We saw them get incredibly close. We saw within, I think, six corners, a controversial moment in which Max Verstappen pushed Lewis Hamilton slightly wide. Lewis Hamilton then took the opportunity to cut the next corner in order to keep the lead. And already, that was a huge talking point.
To the turn nine hairpin. Oh, and there, Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton almost coming together. Hamilton has to go off the track. The Dutch fans roaring in the background.
Should he have cut the corner? Should Max have given him more space? All these questions were flying around the media center and the paddock and on Twitter as well. So if what happened later didn't happen, we would be talking about that right now. But then there is what happened later.
Yeah. So look, I understand that there would have been controversy without what happened later. But what happened later, I mean, it's hard for me to even begin to describe as a F1 casual. So how would you do that for me here?
It's tough. It's very tough to describe about FIA sporting regulations, which is a kind of 50, 60 page document, which I wouldn't recommend anyone trying to read unless you're really keen to get to sleep at night. So what happened? Right, okay. So we had an accident. There was an accident with a car way further down the field, a guy called Nicholas Latifi, Canadian driver, nice guy, not particularly quick, and he managed to put his car in the barriers.
Come the first race.
Oh no, Nicholas Latifi has crashed, and I think that is at turn 14. And this now completely changes the context of this race. If they can clear the Williams in time and we can have a couple of laps racing to the checkered flag.
When that happens, the primary concern of race control to make it as safe as possible. So they release what they call the safety car, and the safety car goes out and it slows down all the cars behind so that they all go at a nice steady pace past the accident, and you have marshals come on the track and they can clear away the accident, and then you can hopefully get racing again. However, this happened just 5 laps away from the end of the race, so with less than 10% of the race remaining. And as a result, there was a chance that the race ended under the safety car. Now, that is a very underwhelming way to finish any motor race, right? Because the cars are no longer racing. They're just cruising behind this safety car so that the damaged car can be removed. It happened in 2012. I was there in Brazil when that happened, and the championship was decided that way. But it's very rare that that happens, how it decides the championship, and it's very unfortunate if it does. So race control were quite keen to get this race going again. And in trying to get the race going again, they kind of skipped through some of the usual procedures Formula One has in place to get the safety car off the track and to allow the cars to go racing again. And in doing that, it kind of favored Max Verstappen. That's why Mercedes was so upset, because the FIA overlooked some of their own rules. And that is the problem, and that's what everybody is talking about.
So just to further clarify, so I know the safety car is this mechanism by which the entire racing field slows down such that they can restore order and safety to the track. But in terms of how Max Verstappen benefited from those couple of steps or so to speak, that were skipped by the racing authorities here, how did that work out practically, just so I can understand?
Okay, so when a safety car comes out, all teams will consider going into the pits to change tyres. Now, usually when you change tyres in a pit stop, all the rest of the cars are whizzing around at full speed, and therefore, relative to them, you lose quite a lot of time. However, if the safety car is out, all your rivals are going relatively slowly compared to you, so you can make a pit stop, get some fresh tyres on, which will make your car faster, and then rejoin the race, and you won't lose as much time relative to the other cars. So that's what all the teams looked at. Mercedes looked at it, and in doing that, they would have given away the lead of the race to Max Verstappen. Lewis Hamilton would have gone into the pits. Max Verstappen at that point would have stayed out because it would have put him ahead of Lewis on the track. And that was a risk for Mercedes that they weren't willing to take, because if the race hadn't restarted, they would have just basically given away the lead to Max Verstappen. But Max could take that risk. So Max came in. Now, that put them in a position that if this race got back underway, remember, we're right towards the end, only 5 laps remaining, but if this race got back underway, Max Verstappen would have fresher tyres, therefore he would be faster than Lewis Hamilton on that final lap, or however many laps we had left. And that's essentially what happened. This is where it gets very complicated. But usually,
it gets more complicated, Lawrence.
I'm sorry, but it does. And this is the frustrating thing at the moment, because Formula One is an incredibly complex sport, and that's why we have this incredibly thick rule book, and that's why it kind of has to be, followed to the letter.
Yes, no, it's all precision engineering, Lawrence, top to bottom, it sounds like. Yes.
It is indeed. So, yeah, and when the rules aren't followed exactly, the teams turn around, they say, well, we were expecting you to follow your own rules. So Mercedes turned around and said, we were expecting you to do that. And if you had done that, then the race would have ended under the safety car, rather than having this final lap of racing where Max Verstappen overtook Lewis Hamilton on the track.
Hamilton sees it coming. It's a lead lunge by Verstappen, who takes the lead of the race. Verstappen now snatches the championship trophy from Lewis Hamilton, who's trying to fight back.
Which was great to watch, but of course is controversial. And it's a hard one, but when you start to kind of look at it, what was the FIA doing? Were they trying to make an entertaining race? So give this final lap of racing, which was dramatic, with Max Verstappen winning the title by overtaking Lewis Hamilton on track on that final lap, partly thanks to these fresh tyres he was able to put on the car during the safety car period? Or were they trying to restart the race within the regulations and having safely got rid of the car that crashed? And that's the question.
Yeah, no, there is a trade-off clearly between entertainment and, I guess Mercedes, for whom Lewis Hamilton very famously races, and integrity, they might say. of the rules. And what was the reaction on the scene, Lawrence? Because obviously we've unpacked this now in detail, but when this was all happening live in real time, what was the response on the track?
Well, it was very clear that Mercedes were upset. F1 broadcast the radio communications between the teams and the race control, the FIA, Michael Massey, who is the race director.
No, Mikey, no, no, Mikey, that was so not right. Mikey, what was that?
Toto Wolff of Mercedes to the race director, Michael Massey, who had kind of put in place this chain of events. And he was furious, Toto Wolff. We weren't that surprised when we heard that Mercedes were going to protest the result of the race. And that's exactly what they did.
So there is another phase to this controversy, and that is, of course, the litigation. So the filing of protest that you just alluded to, is that a thing that you see often, Lawrence, in this sport? Tell me what happened after this thing ended.
Well, it's always there. There's always a possibility of a protest in Formula One. And this year, I think more than ever, because it's been such a tight title fight, and because these teams, there's no love lost between them, you know, they really are fighting each other for everything on the track and indeed everything off the track. So, yes, there have been a number of protests thrown either way by the teams and certainly threats of protest. So, you know, this wasn't really a surprise because this was Mercedes felt that the way the race had been dealt with essentially by the referee was unfair. And as a result, they felt they should have won the race and they should have won the championship. As a result, Hamilton should have won the championship. The problem being is that Red Bull didn't really do anything wrong at all. You know, Red Bull just went out, did their race, put Max always in a position where he could take advantage of the situation, however it played out. And that's exactly what Max did. So it seemed very difficult all of a sudden because Mercedes weren't really protesting what Max did. But they did put forward this, you know, this complaint that the FIA didn't really follow their own process. But then how can the FIA turn around and say, okay, we messed up, therefore we're going to strip Max Verstappen of the championship? You know, that would also seem wrong. So we got into this situation, which I don't remember F1 ever really being in before, where a team was protesting what the governing body had done in order to try and take a championship off a rival and, of course, get it themselves. And, you know, that's a very rare situation.
But Lawrence, hold on. I have more questions for you after the break.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
The rarity of all of this, I would just like you to explain just the stakes in this race, Lawrence. Like, Max Verstappen beating Lewis Hamilton means what in this sport, just bluntly?
Well, Lewis Hamilton is statistically the best driver there has ever been in Formula One. He's won 7 world titles. There's only one other driver who's done that. And your listeners may recognize the name, Michael Schumacher.
Yes.
But Lewis Hamilton has won more individual races. So arguably, he's statistically the better driver. And there's this young guy called Max Verstappen, 24 years old. He's been around in F1 for a while now because he started so young at 17. But at 24 years old, here he is fighting against Lewis Hamilton, a 36-year-old. So you've got these two greats of a generation. It's very rare that that happens, that crosses over, and you really get to see, you know, two guys who you can kind of benchmark other drivers against and see. So Max there going up for his first world title, Lewis Hamilton going up for his record-breaking eighth world title. And, you know, that is huge in the sport. Absolutely huge. And Max, where he is currently now with one title, and I think this puts him on about 18, 19 wins, he's actually in a position where he can threaten Lewis's records down the line. So, you know, this is significant, because if this is the first of Verstappen's titles, which, barring a potential legal argument, it is, then that puts him on target to maybe challenge some of Hamilton's records that he will leave when he retires, probably in the next 2 years or so.
So basically, the fact that this all came down, Lawrence, to the season finale here, literally, I mean, it could not have been more tightly and hotly contested, it sounds like. Did we hear from Lewis and Max after the race? What did they say about this, if anything?
Well, we only very briefly heard from Lewis Hamilton immediately after, and he was very gracious in defeat.
Firstly, a big congratulations to Max and to his team. Everyone back at the factory, all the men and women we have worked so hard of this whole year. It's been the most difficult of seasons, and I'm so proud of them, so grateful to be a part of the journey with them. And this last part of the season, we gave it absolutely everything, and we never gave up, and that's the most important thing.
He very much towed the line, and he wasn't really asked very difficult questions, because he was talked to immediately after he got out the car, and those questions tend to be relatively soft. You know, they're there for TV. They're not the kind of things we usually ask. But then Lewis didn't hang around to talk to us, to the media, as he usually would, as actually he would usually be required to under the regulations. So we didn't get a full reaction from Lewis about what this really means, but I'm sure we will in the coming days. From Max, we got bits and pieces, but it was all before this had really kicked off. So, we couldn't really ask him about the protests and so on, because we were still trying to figure out at that time exactly what it was about. So, yeah, there's still a lot to come in this story, especially what Lewis Hamilton really thinks of it all. And you know what? The next engagement they both have together will be the prize-giving ceremony. Formula One doesn't give out the championship trophy on the day that it's won. It waits for a kind of very lavish prize-giving trophy in Paris.
Oh, wow.
On Thursday. Yeah, so, and you know, the part of the reason they don't give it out on the evening of the race is in case there's a protest, because they want time to clear all that, to make sure they're giving it to the right person when they do it. So, so we will all be going to Paris on Thursday, presumably to see it given to Max Verstappen. But there, Lewis, again, will be required to talk to the media. So hopefully by then, at least, we will get some reaction. If not, I suspect we might get a post or two on social media in the coming days. So keep your eyes peeled on Lewis Hamilton's Instagram for that, because I'm sure we'll have something to say about that.
So just to be extra clear about this, Lawrence. So as of now, and again, it's approaching 4 a.m. in Abu Dhabi where you are. As of right now, Max Verstappen has his first title and Lewis Hamilton lost. But that is all technically up in the air. That's still something that we could see movement on, the very fact of this matter.
Yes, the result is final it's final in that the FIA have published it, and Max Verstappen was the winner of the race and therefore the winner of the championship. However, the protest that Mercedes put in, which was dismissed by the stewards, has now been put out there, and Mercedes have issued their intent to appeal. It means that they have the right to do so within the next kind of 2 or 3 days. Usually it's 96 hours, but because the prize giving ceremony is coming up so quickly, they're actually going to have to do it slightly quicker than normal. And so they have a small amount of time to put a case together. And if they want to take this to the next level, which is the FIA's International Court of Appeal, they can do. And then that is an independent body that will judge the facts. They will look at the reason the stewards came up with their decision, and they will decide whether that was right or not. We're kind of all hoping it doesn't go there, because it essentially means the title will be decided in a courtroom, which no one really wants. But that's the stage we're at. So I kind of almost feel I should be apologizing to your listeners on behalf of Formula One for having such a complicated sport and such a ridiculous ending to what up to that point was, I promise you, a fantastic battle, really one of the best battles we've seen in Formula One for years. But it is incredibly complicated the way it all panned out. The arguments are incredibly complex, but yeah, technically it's not quite over yet.
Lawrence, as F1 becomes a truly American sport, by the way, this has been the trajectory, right? It has been this commodity in America that people are increasingly obsessed with. As it continues that trajectory, I just want to remind you of the only lesson I think that's worth sharing on my end here as someone who is steeped in American sports, which is never apologize for the soap opera, man. It's great.
Well, we should appreciate it, shouldn't we? Because it's certainly got interest in the sport, you know. And also, look, this rivalry shouldn't really end here. I mean, unless Lewis does something very surprising, you know, and leaves the sport, he's contracted for another 2 years. So this doesn't end here. This goes rolls on to next year, and there's every chance that Red Bull and Mercedes will have the two fastest cars next year as well. And that means that we'll start in March and we'll do it all over again.
Yeah, Lawrence Edmondson, thank you for joining us. And I tell you to go get some rest as it's, you know, early morning time in Abu Dhabi, but it sounds like the roller coaster may not yet be over for you. So good luck.
Thank you very much.
All right, after the break, we place a domestic call to our Monday morning quarterback, Alex Smith, who explains the soap opera that was Week 14 in the NFL.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So, Alex, we just watched the late games today, and it was chaos. It was glorious chaos, depending on whether you root for the 49ers and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I suppose. On the one hand, we saw the Niners beat the Bengals in overtime, 26-23, a basically game-winning touchdown thrown by Jimmy Garoppolo to Brandon Ayuk.
How about that for a finish in Cincinnati?
The call on the field was that Ayuk stepped out of bounds at the one, and after review, it is ruled a touchdown and a game winner.
But what the Bills endured in that game in Tampa, man, they were down 21 and Josh Allen tows them back to the brink.
Motion, takes the snap, looks to his right, throws to his right, caught ball, touchdown, Davis, and the Bills get closer.
I mean, I feel like that's the one we got to talk about here.
Yeah, the game of the day, no doubt, Bills-Bucks. And it really didn't look like it. I mean, the Bucks jumped on them, and this looked like a blowout. And I think everybody, I know I was scratching my head on, like, what happened to the Bills? This is a team that boasts a top five scoring defense and a top five scoring offense. And yet this team was 7-5 heading into today, now is 7-6. And at one point was down this, I mean, it was 24-3. And the Bills didn't even look like they had life. Like, they didn't even have much fight in them. Now, I do think this defense stepped up, and Josh Allen, man, put this offense on his back and literally brought him back from the depths and almost got this win.
I mean, 300 plus passing yards for Josh Allen, 100 more yards on the ground. It's hard to imagine him doing more than what he did. I mean, it felt like one of those things where as a quarterback, you're like, that's not his fault, man. That's just how it felt.
He was literally willing this team with plays all over the place, whether it be with his legs or he had some just absurd throws today from the pocket and his arm. And he like sprains his ankle. He tapes it up. He goes back out there. Like you said, he rushes for over 100 yards, leads this team in rushing.
Right. I mean, we saw him walk out, limp out really to his postgame presser in a walking boot, Alex, which drew gasps from Bills fans everywhere because he doesn't know what the injury is. He needs more tests. He is pretty sore, he said. But this is the Bills' entire season now on the line.
He was really impressive, but they came up short. Again, Brady got him in overtime. The Bucs defense got a big stop. And Brady on third and three makes him pay. The Bills are in man. He hits this little crossing route coming back. Nobody's left in the picture, and it's a walk-off touchdown win.
Brady throws a pass. Caught ball first out of the 50, outside the numbers 40, to the 30-yard line, to the 25. It's Perriman. Bashaud Perriman. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. Box win in overtime.
I don't even know what to make of Tom Brady and the numbers that we keep hearing. I mean, he's defied literally laws of nature at this point.
He's going to win, Alex, MVP this year at this rate at age 44 after winning Super Bowl MVP. And I feel like we are kind of numb to how insane that is because we have just been living with this guy break the laws of nature for 20 years.
I was trying to look at, you know, who could we make a case? Who could compete with him for an MVP? Like, you know, like who's there in the running? And I don't think it's very close at this point. I don't. He's literally number one in passing in the whole NFL. He's number one in total touchdowns. Number one in passer rating, and he's number two in QBR. So, I mean, like every measurable you want to take. Oh, and he has his team is one of the best records in football. One small note I will give, I guess, my opinion on who's there, you know, that may give him some comp here if they have some big weeks coming up. But I think Aaron is right in the conversation the way he's playing.
Yeah, Rodgers. Yeah, sure.
And I think the sneaky one is Justin Herbert. I think Justin Herbert's numbers are ridiculous, and he's carrying his team as well. I know it's not as impressive as Tom, but he certainly deserves some recognition what he's done this year so far.
Can we just talk about that one throw Justin Herbert made, Alex? And you're already laughing because you already know what it is, but describe it for those who missed it.
I was watching it live, and it was just like... I mean, I feel like I've seen people attempt this, but it rarely, they don't hit it. Like, it just doesn't work. So it was like a third and 11. He gets scrambled. He gets flushed out of a pocket to his right. And he kind of rolls. He's like rolling out into green grass. And I think he's on like on his own 40 or something. He kind of sets up almost javelin style with this bad boy and hucks this ball down the middle.
Huck,
I mean, the ball
the
leaves the picture.
Huck is the perfect
He gets hit. Like right as he sets his feet and launches, he gets hit too. I mean, he's got defenders coming at him and he launches this ball and the ball leaves the camera frame up and out. And he hits this receiver, Guyton, again, who he hit last week.
Yes.
Dead stride on this post. I mean, he had to throw this ball 70 yards and he hits him dead stride going into the end zone.
Here we go on third down. Here comes the rush. Rolling to his right as Herbert sets his feet, takes a shot downfield, has Guyton. Touchdown, Chargers! There is one quarterback in the NFL that can make that play, and he is on the field here this afternoon.
And it was literally like one of those plays. Like, did that just happen?
So the other game that looked like it was over by like halftime, but was very much not, was of course the Dallas Cowboys against your boys, the Washington football team, Alex. And this was a game that came in with all of the theatrics that you would hope for from a matchup full of hate, to be quite honest. I'm just curious, your mindset going into this. I mean, it started off before the game started, right? Mike McCarthy, the head coach of the Cowboys, declares that this is going to be a game that they're going to win, that he's confident in that. Ron Rivera, the coach of the Washington football team, says, I think that's a big mistake to make it all about yourself, fellow head coach, in that way. And then it kicks off and it's like, this feels like an obliteration. And I'm just curious your psychology as all of this was unfolding.
You know, at the beginning of the year, everybody, again, was laughing at the NFC East. You know, certainly the Cowboys got hot, but everybody kind of, you know, doubting this division. And look at them now. They have two teams in the playoffs. The Eagles are right there still in the hunt. But I thought it was amazing that we had this matchup. These are two storied franchises that do not like each other. And we're going to get this, right? And they're both hot and playing well and obviously looking forward to it. And then, yeah, Mike McCarthy does, I mean... It's coaching 101, Pablo, I think, that you don't guarantee victory as a head coach. I mean, we've talked about before, obviously, the genius of Belichick. And I mean, I think he's really obviously written a lot of the rule books in coaching. But God, talk about something he would never do. And Mike McCarthy guaranteeing victory. But his team pulled it out for him. They jumped up to an early lead. And this is the first time, this is the first time we've seen Micah Parsons, DeMarcus Lawrence, and Randy Gregory on the field at the same time for the Cowboys since week one. Mm. And man, did they show up. Washington could not block them. I mean, they all had at least one sack, multiple forced fumbles. Micah Parsons has a huge forced fumble that ended up going for a touchdown. Randy Gregory had an interception along with the sack.
Got to get to the 27. Blitz is coming. They see it. Knocked away. Oh, Gregory, what a play. He tipped it. He intercepted it.
They were unblockable and dominated this game, really took it over all the way till the end.
They knocked out Taylor Heinicke, Alex. Let's be clear about that too, right? The starting quarterback gets hurt because of that defense.
Yeah, Micah Parsons pummeled Taylor on the sack fumble that went for a touchdown. I felt so bad watching it. I mean, it was one of those ones. Taylor didn't see it come, and he was trying to throw, and he literally got pile-drived into the earth, and ball comes loose, and it goes for a touchdown the other way. I mean, it looked like it hurt. I know he was in some pain. But Dak Prescott almost gave this game away through one of the worst picks I think I've ever seen him throw. Literally, they're in basically 4-minute offense, just milking the clock, and they run a little naked bootleg, and he hits Cole Holcomb in the chest, who returns it for a touchdown. Cole Holcomb, who has the worst mullet in the NFL since Brian Bosworth. It's terrible looking, but he makes a huge play, gets his team back in it, and talk about in a swing of events. On second down, Kyle Allen puts a ball up on a go route, and he hits his receiver in stride. But he drops it, and on the very next play on third down, Randy Gregory comes through with a sack fumble. Again, they couldn't block those guys all day. Sack fumble for the game winner, and that was it. So this game did not lack for intensity, which is great to see. It's obviously what we're looking for in a big rivalry game.
Yeah. Dallas's defense now leads the NFL with 5 defensive touchdowns. They won this game 27-20, holding on to beat Washington. And I want to pivot here at the end, Alex, to what we're going to see on Monday night, because there is another divisional matchup that is going to be incredibly impactful, and it's going to be the Rams visiting the Cardinals in Arizona. I mean, this is one of the biggest games of the entire year. And when you see Kyler Murray match up against the Rams defense, you know, what I keep on seeing come up again in analysis of this is zone coverage. The Rams do that a lot. Kyler seemingly feasts on that. Evaluate that particular dynamic for me, if you could.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really been a strong point for Kyler this year. Up until his injury, it was just like we talked about. I mean, the guy's throwing at almost an 80% rate, especially against zone, getting the ball out of his hands. They have so many playmakers. I think it's gotten even better since they've added Zach Ertz. Obviously, one of the premier pass catching tight ends in the league, and you know, combined with some running game, you know, with those two backs, and they are potentially going to get Chase Edmonds back tonight as well. So it's really kind of I think taking Kyler's game to the next level. We've seen highlight plays, right? We've seen, you know, his big arm and obviously ridiculous athleticism, but I mean, I think he's really added his ability to hit the free throw, so to speak, right? I mean, he is just getting the ball out of his hands. He's dicing defenses underneath all day. And he's really made them almost impossible to stop. I'm interested to see, you know, he came back last week, but it was really kind of a bad weather game in Chicago. He made some great plays with his legs, but they really obviously weren't able to throw the ball like they'd hoped to. You know, they're back home in the dome, big division game. I'm interested to see if he's back to where he was pre-injury, because he was in the thick of the MVP race, I thought, before he got injured. And so,
yeah, the missed games is the reason why he's not in a real contention with Tom Brady. Yeah.
And so this is a big game. You know, I bad blood, I think, between these two. This division, this whole division is so talented across the board. And I'm excited. I guess I'm a little curious. I think he's going to kill it. I mean, there's nothing to say otherwise. He's been so consistent this year. The big question is whether or not this Rams D-line can get any pressure, right? I mean, this has really been a strength of theirs in the past. Can they get home and disrupt Kyler? I think that'll be something to watch for. But, you know, if I were a betting man, I don't see it happening.
Yeah, I mean, Kyler Murray, Alex, completion percentage this season, 72.7%. I mean, that's third highest ever, highest by anyone not named Drew Brees. And when you look across the way at the travails of Matt Stafford. I mean, we've talked about him on and off all year as he's been on and off all year. I mean, look, the sad reality of his quarterback record, wins and losses, which is a fraught statistic for a quarterback because it's a team record that we peg on an individual, as we've also talked about here. But he's 0-17 in his career against teams that are five or more games over 500. I just wonder if you knew it was that bad, because I was staggered when I saw that it was like that for him.
I didn't know it was that bad. We got to take all his stats, especially as they pertain to team, and kind of throw them out the window. I mean, the guy played for the Detroit Lions for 12 years. I mean, this is...
It's fair. Yes.
You know, so it's not really... he hasn't really been playing on an even playing field with a lot of his competition. But it's not surprising, and I think we're going to continue to talk about it unless he overcomes it. So I think with that, though, I mean, they got to protect him. They got to give him a chance. His O-line tonight's got to do a better job. It's going to be something to watch. The Rams have been so schizophrenic. They started so hot at the beginning of the year, lighting the world on fire. Stafford, obviously, a huge part of that. And then they've really kind of struggled to find their identity. We've talked about it, obviously. And so I think a lot of eyes are going to be on him. I'm hopeful that they can get back to the Rams, Sean McVay team that we're used to seeing, you know, putting on a show on offense, doing a lot of dynamic, creative things. We just haven't seen it, obviously, as of late. Hopefully they can get back to that.
Alex Smith, man, thank you as always for taking the time.
Pablo, good as always, buddy.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.